Good evening and welcome to the show, Je Savais Pas. I'm your host, Esther Tyree, and in the studio this evening, I have with me soon-to-be Dr. William Plummer, choral director at UL, founder-director of BREV, Baton Rouge Early Vocal Ensemble, and choir director of Our Lady, Queen of Angels in Opelousas. And he also does metal detecting for fun. So this should be an interesting conversation. Welcome, Mr. Plummer, and thank you for agreeing to be my guest on Je Savais Pas.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So let's just start with, you know, your day gigs, I guess, the choral ensembles at UL. How many are there?
There are three choirs at UL. We have the chamber singers, which is our top choir. That's the choir that's the heavily auditioned choir with prepared excerpts and so forth, and the students all vie to be in that. And then we have the university chorale, which is the large mixed choir on campus. And that mixed choir kind of functions as our orchestra chorus, and they join with the chamber singers in various performances. And then we have also the Raging Cajun Women's Choir, which is our newest ensemble on campus that was official as of this past semester, fall of 2016. And so this is our first official year, although the group had existed in some form 1 year before that. So we're just getting that off the ground, and it's a fantastic group to work with, and I have high hopes for them.
Yay! So it's fun to have those ensembles to be a part of, to kind of get you a break out of all the thinking of your regular college coursework. Which group was featured with the UL Orchestra for the Halloween concert last year?
Well, we had the chorale sang one piece with the Halloween concert, and that was the In the Hall of the Mountain King. And then the women's choir sang a Verdi opera chorus, the Witch's Chorus from Macbeth. So that was just exciting.
Yeah, no, that was a lot of fun to do that that show. And then to have the – I always love collaboration when there's groups that work together to present something, and it's fun to watch. So what got you into what was your interest with vocal singing and conducting and stuff like that?
Well, I started out college as a biology major. And
that's a switch.
It was a little bit of a change, yeah.
Yeah.
So I started as a biology major because I said, well, you know, I want to make money. And, you know, there was kind of that pressure from my parents to walk that path. You know, we grew up in rural southwestern Virginia in the mountains, and, you know, we made do. And so there was this desire to kind of rise out of that and be more. And they, you know, put their faith in me to, you know, go be a doctor. And, you know, that sounded great until I got to college. And then I walked into a choir class my freshman year. I also walked into a weird class that was Appalachian music. And my first college experience at 8 a.m. on whatever day that was that I had my first class was Appalachian music at 8 a.m. And the woman who taught it came in, and she was playing the accordion in a gypsy skirt and, you know, big hoop earrings. And I thought, what planet have I landed on? But I'll tell you that that class and the especially being in choir really were kind of turning points. So I didn't last very long as a biology major.
That must have been fun. I feel like you've gone into an alternate time-space continuum when that happens. Had you done any singing before? I know in the Appalachians, in that area, there's a lot of folk music that goes on, but had you been exposed to it?
There was a lot of folk music. Yeah, my dad played some guitar. My mother was a church pianist and organist, and she just sort of did that as a part-time job. She was a home economics major, so she, you know, her skill set was substantially different than that. But she had been raised by parents who believed that she needed to learn how to play the piano, and so she did. And I grew up with piano music in the house, and actually my undergraduate degree was in piano.
Okay.
Because at that point in time, I couldn't really see myself as a choral music educator. It was a gradual process for me to realize that that was what I really wanted to do with my life. But I grew up around folk music, and my parents both, you know, my dad played a little bit and my mom played a lot, and I got to hear her at church. And of course, the experience of being in a church choir, which was tremendous for me. I sang, well, probably every voice part because I remember I was a first soprano, and I could honk the high B flats and so forth. And then my voice broke, and things were really weird for a while. And finally, I kind of settled down into the bass baritone range. Mm-hmm. But now I think I'm really a tenor, so go figure.
Yeah. So what – obviously, you probably have students that come into your classes that don't have any background, and then you have some that are maybe majoring in that. What's your approach to introducing them, the ones that haven't had much experience, to understanding how, you know, vocalists carry their instrument inside of them, and the music has to come. Anybody playing any music, whether it's a vocal or instrument, it has to come from inside. But instrumentalists have it, their instrument to express it, whereas a vocalist has to express it through their voice. So what, give us some steps that you use with the...
Well, it's tough because, you know, vocalists, you know, when your instrument is your body, then it's so important. You know, it's important in general to maintain good health, mm-hmm. and good habits. And, you know, that's one of the things that I rank very highly, you know, for vocalists is that we take care of ourselves.
Absolutely.
You know, especially with water, hydration, you know, and sleep. And those are things that we kind of tend to forget as college students.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know what sleep feels like anymore.
I have finals tomorrow.
Deadlines.
I have an exam. I have a deadline. I have a paper to write.
Paper to write. Yep. So I think that's immensely important. And, you know, really, the other interesting outgrowth of this is, you know, music is so personal in general that it's something that we kind of own, and it's near and dear to us. So when someone says, you know, this is not good enough, or here's how you can improve it, a lot of times what you hear is, I'm not good enough, or,
right.
you know, things like that. And so I think that, you know, it takes some training to be able to realize that you know, what we're after is the end product, and the journey to get there is one that is different for all of us, but mm-hmm. the end result is ideally going to be as similar as possible. And so, you know, when we hear those types of things, you know, I think just to, as vocalists, it's even more personal because the instrument is us, you know, and every voice is different.
Right.
Much as really every instrument is different. But it's a little more personal, I think, because we carry the instrument, you know, in our own bodies.
Oh, totally. I mean, if my piano goes out of tune, I call the piano tuner. Mm-hmm. If my violin breaks a string, I go get a string and change it. But if something happens with my voice, I got to figure out what it is and, you know, kind of do it myself.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, as a teacher, it's not enough to say, well, that wasn't good enough or that needs improving. We have to find ways to show them how to do it. And I sort of had this discussion a while back with somebody that we don't instinctively know how to practice. That's something that has to be taught to us as we go through our musical journey. And as a teacher, that's one of our responsibilities to our students, to give them practical ways or strategies to work on something, to improve it so that it becomes the desired outcome.
It's interesting that you mentioned that because it's totally true. You have to... Learning your instrument is one part of it, but learning how to practice is another part. And it's something that I've realized after teaching some basic skills courses, like some music theory for non-majors that I taught in Kentucky, and some basic courses like that, but also teaching keyboard skills courses here at UL. You know, the sense is that I have to codify my own practice techniques so that I can teach them. And it's mm-hmm. been very beneficial for me to try to think about those. And what I've realized is that I practice very differently in undergrad, and I practice differently in graduate school than the way I practice now. And if anything, you know, the processes are more efficient and more streamlined. So I feel like I get a better investment for the amount of time mm-hmm. that I spend. Mm-hmm. And just mm-hmm. teaching students to do that can be, it depends on where they're at, you know, musically. But teaching them some of those ways, I think, is really important.
Mm-hmm. So you have a recording of one of your ensembles. Would mm-hmm. you like to introduce
Absolutely.
It, explain it, what we're going to hear?
This is a recording of the UL Lafayette Chorale. This is, our large mixed choir, about, you know, 55 to 60 voices. It's an audition group, as all three of our choirs are. And this group, this performance was from the International Alliance for Women in Music.
Mm-hmm.
This was an international organization that chose to have to come to our campus this past October 22nd and perform and have their works performed. And we had visiting composers from all around the world come and work with our choirs. And this is one of the pieces that we perform. This is actually a composition by Rosefany Powell called In the Beginning Was the Word.
Okay, well, let's listen to the UL Vocal Group, In the Beginning Was the Word.
In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with a God, and the Word was a God. The same was in the beginning with a God.
In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with a God, and the Word was a God. The same was in the beginning with a God.
In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with a God, and the Word was a God. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with a God, and the Word was a God. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with a God, and the Word was a God. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with a God, and the Word was a God.
That's impressive, that a cappella choir. That's a whole different ball of wax than singing with an orchestra. I know we were talking about how, as a vocalist, especially if you're a cappella, you're responsible for all the elements of music and keeping track of the pitch. Mm-hmm. And so how are those some – what are some of the things you use to so help students understand that and mm-hmm. grow in that ability?
It all comes down really to me to awareness. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's processing speed of the brain. You know, the fewer musical skills you have, the more each one of those musical skills is going to take up, like, processing speed. You know, mm-hmm. is what I call it. You know, it's like your CPU is getting bogged down, your server is getting bogged down. You know, but the more musical skills you have, the more you can process things on some levels.
Right.
And also have a background, you know, put those in the background process. So they're running, but they're not really taking up that much energy or thought, so that you are coasting along and in control of other musical parameters that are perhaps harder ones to get in control of.
Mm-hmm.
And so with a cappella singing, it creates a responsibility for us to provide our own, you know, shaping and our own musicality and our own percussion, because we don't have a piano there and we have to keep pitch. So a lot of it is basically listening. It's an awareness not only of our own vocal part and the responsibilities that are associated with that, but also, you know, if I'm a bass, you know, then it's I have to listen to the tenors, I have to listen to the altos and sopranos and figure out what's going on and match across the ensemble and know which mm-hmm. notes I have to tune to. And it's interesting because it's an entirely different responsibility set than accompanied music, where we don't have to worry about pitch so much because it's going to be provided by the instrument or instruments. Mm-hmm. And so forth. And we don't have to worry about rhythm because we either have a percussion section in an orchestra or we have a piano, which is a percussion instrument.
Right. Yeah. So you have a foundation where a cappella you don't, and you have to be that foundation and mm-hmm. keep track of. I mean, I know the conductor's up there keeping time, but you still have to have that sense of rhythm and how you're part fits in with that and everybody else's. I know with Karla Kadian, we did the director did an experiment. Well, not an experiment. He just wanted to let us hear something. And so we sang it with the piano, and then we sang it a cappella. And we had the starting pitch, and then we finished and gave the ending pitch, and we're all going, okay, whoa, that was definitely a case of flatting. We deviated off. It only takes one to not, you know, to just slightly skew the pitch, and then everybody starts to follow.
Well, and if you're used to singing in a group where the pitch is maintained all the time, then it kind of tracks the piece, or it grooves the piece in, and you get to the point where you're very sensitive to fluctuations in pitch and incorrect rhythms or rhythms that don't quite line up, just slightly one side or the other of each other. And as that awareness increases, then you're better able to keep pitch moving forward. You know, it's interesting, you know, with the conducting aspect you mentioned. You know, I find that I'm a very different conductor in the early stages of a piece than at the end. And I think that, you know, conducting is one of those odd animals where there are basic rules and so forth. And it's an area of study and expertise. It's not just, you know, getting up there to kind of
right. You're not just up there waving a stick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you know, it seems like
when they show the caricature of a penguin. Just flapping the wings.
Just flapping.
What is your purpose? Well, it's a whole lot more than just standing in front and waving a stick.
Yeah, it becomes Bugs Bunny, you know. but you know, it's the fact that in the beginning stages, I'm very defensive, you know, and I show the rhythms more because I'm aware that I have to give them that because I know the piece so well, and they don't know it well at all at that stage. And so I have to be very defensive. I'm, you know, and I don't let them move or change on notes because I don't show the changes or show the rhythm, you know. So it's a different type of conducting. And then towards the end, I can actually expand and show more of the musical things and maybe even not show the time so much, because then at that point, anything that I don't show belongs to them.
Right.
And so the less I can show, the better we are in the final product. If I just breathe and they start the piece and finish the piece and it's gorgeous and they don't need me at all, that's the perfect thing. Because then I can become transparent and the music speaks through them.
Yeah.
Music is not designed to need this extra intermediary. And often, you know, I remember when I was young and I would sit in a concert hall and I would see this, you know, very soft moment in music, and then all of a sudden there would be a loud one that would come, and I would see the conductor's preparatory gesture as he brought his arms up in the air and breathed, you know, to get the orchestra to come in. And I thought, if I hadn't seen that, it would have been a surprise, you know.
Yes.
And so I feel like the music really needs for a conductor to kind of be out of the way a lot, at least personally for me, so that the music can speak. And you know, it's the supreme gift. If I can give the choir, the ensemble, the instrumentalists that sense, that rhythm, that independence, where they don't need me anymore, I'm very happy to be in the background.
Yeah, so I imagine it's much more at the beginning structured as any, I guess, art project. And then as you go through and you get very, I call it muscle memory, the parts that have to be done, and maybe inner hearing or you have your part down, that then more attention can be given to expression or how. And I always tell my students, it's like, get the basics, what and when. And when that's ingrained and easy, the way it is to say your name, then everything, all your attention goes to how. How do you want it played? How do you want this part to sound? And it's neat. I guess, again, with the vocalist, it has to be more aware of the internal workings and you don't have to interpret it through an instrument.
You're exactly right. The original impetus is can I make the sound? Can I make a sound? And then, you know, after that, we start to ask ourselves questions of, can I make this sound? Mm-hmm. Or can this sound act like that? You know, it's the ability, can I shape the sound? It's very true.
So you also had a vision and implemented that with your Baton Rouge Early Vocal Ensemble, or BRAV. Tell us a little bit about that. Actually, sorry, before we go into that, does UL have any performances coming up in the spring?
Yes, we have three wonderful performances coming up in the spring. We're collaborating, we're very thankful when we collaborate with the Acadiana Symphony. And so we are performing with the Acadiana Symphony Orchestra in St. John Cathedral on March 31st. At 7 p.m.
Be beautiful.
The program is Chichester Psalms by Bernstein, which is kind of like a West Side Story type music, but with Hebrew text. It's just an exciting piece.
Sounds exciting. Like it. Wow.
And then we're also doing a pair of Mozart pieces called Dixit Dominus, and the other one is Magnificat. And both of those are just stunning, and that will be with our chamber singers, and the Chichester Psalms will be with both choirs combined. That's March 31st at 7 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
Then we have a concert coming up on April 8th, which is our spring concert in Angers at 7:30 p.m., and that is with all three choirs.
Mm-hmm.
And that is music about music. So it is a program of self-referential music, not just music that is, you know, about music, but music that's about itself.
Mm-hmm.
So chew on that for a little while. It's kind of, you know, for example, the
yeah,
first piece
exactly.
on the program is called We're the Choir. And, you know, that's pretty self-explanatory. The choir basically introduces themselves musically.
Mm-hmm.
The last piece on the program is I Have Had Singing, which at that point will be true for everybody, including the choirs in the audience. There's a piece called Musical Risotto,
mm-hmm.
which is musical rice, basically. And every little kernel of that rice is an Italian tempo marking or style word, and all of them are sung in the style that the word means.
Wow.
So
interesting.
Just interesting program, multimedia presentation with photos of projected of art about art, self-referential art, and poems read that are poems about themselves. So,
wow, neato.
And then the final concert we have is April 25th, and that's mm-hmm. also at 7:30 in Angers. And that's the Raging Cajun Women's Choir with a chamber orchestra composed of outstanding student players and also Lafayette High Strings. And they will be performing the Pergolesi Stabat Mater.
Fun, fun. And so tickets and information can be found through...
music.louisiana.edu.
Okay, cool. Well, let's listen to one of your songs from Brev, and then we'll go back and discuss how that came to be. What do you have for us?
Okay, so we have a wonderful track from a performance in New Orleans of the Baton Rouge Early Vocal Ensemble performing with the Chamber Orchestra on the Monteverdi, beautiful Monteverdi piece, Dixit Dominus.
Okay, let's have a listen. Beautiful. That was Brev singing what? Remind me.
Dixie Dominus by Claudia Monteverdi.
So I didn't know. I mean, I knew that you were the director of this group. I had no idea it was your vision to start it, and you were the one that got it started. However many years ago? Tell us about it.
Well, I started it in 2010 when I was just starting at LSU taking classes, and the group was six people. It was just several of my friends that decided to sing in a stairwell because that was the best acoustic we had access
to. Hey, sometimes that's the best place to get things started.
And, you know, it's very organic the way it started. I really felt strongly that Louisiana needed a group that sang early music and very at a very high level, because we really only have Musica da Camera out of New Orleans mm-hmm. that sings lots of medieval music and is part instrument, part singer group. And I thought, you know, we really need a dedicated vocal ensemble to Renaissance and Baroque music here in this state. And so Breve was the first one that was, you know, and we just got our nonprofit status last year. The group has grown to 12 members and is going very strong.
And and it's so important to preserve, you know, there's always talk about preserving our nation's history, your family's history, the history of mankind. Music has a history too, and not a lot of people, unless you study music and music history and stuff, that they don't understand that music is similar to a river, and where it starts and it flows out and then goes into all these other areas, and the people from there bring their experiences and their culture to it, and we get all these offshoots, but it all stems from the early music. And so keeping connected to that, I guess similar to keeping connected to the roots of language and, you know, making sure the rivers at their sources are healthy, you know, is important for just future and remembering where we are and where we want to go with music.
It's all our cultural heritage. We mm-hmm. we own every bit of it, and it belongs to all of us. And so this is part of the reason that this group exists, is to be able to bring that to people in Louisiana, especially music that is unfamiliar, music by composers that they've never heard of. Of course, people have heard of Monteverdi, but but many of our programs feature composers that probably no one would know.
Right. So where was that recording? Because that sounded way more like more than 12 people. That was really beautiful.
That was in New Orleans. It was in New Orleans.
Mm-hmm. That was a beautiful space that they were in. So only 12. So
only
12. What's the breakdown?
Three soprano-ish voices, three altos, three tenors, three basses. Mm-hmm. We have a countertenor in the group that sings some male alto. We have those, you know, within the bass section, we have two low basses and a baritone, mm-hmm. you know, so the baritone sometimes sings tenor, you know, some of them kind of move around between sections.
Yeah.
Depending on what the demands of the music are.
So is that the intent, to keep it small, or are you looking for more people to join? Or?
Just by virtue of how we decide things within the group in terms of accepting gigs, mm-hmm. The venues pay us, and then the concerts are often free. But we have done ticketed events before, like we did one at the Marigny Opera House this past December for a Christmas performance, mm-hmm. and that was ticketed. But many of our performances are free and open to the public, and then the venues pay. And so we decide that, you know, based on who can be there. And the larger the group is, the more those decisions become onerous. So I think we're going to stay small.
Mm-hmm. So any performances for Breve in the spring?
Yes, we have some exciting performances. We have three in March and one in April. Mm-hmm. Our first one is March 5th, and that's at St. Mary's Episcopal Church. It's a decommissioned, abandoned space. It's above St. Francisville.
Oh, wow.
And it will be at dark on March 5th, which is a Sunday evening at approximately 6 p.m.
Uh-huh.
That one there will be reservations for, but it will be a free concert. But the reservations won't come online until February 10th.
Mm-hmm.
So depending on the date of the broadcast of this show, I expect those tickets to move very, very swiftly.
I'm sure.
March 12th in Baton Rouge at First Presbyterian Church, 3 p.m. March 26th in Opelousas at Queen of Angels at 2 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
And April 9th, which is Palm Sunday, in the evening at St. Mary Magdalene in Abbeville at 7 p.m.
Nice. And is there a website or
yes,
a Facebook page?
Yes. We have both a Facebook page, the Baton Rouge Early Vocal Ensemble. We also have our website, which is earlymusicbreve.org.
Mm-hmm.
That's earlymusicbreve.org.
Great. Well, we appreciate you coming into the studio today. And stay tuned, y'all. We're going to have William Plummer back to talk about his metal detecting. But you're listening to Je Savais Pas, a production of KRVS, brought to you as a public service of the University of Louisiana at Lafayette, which joins you in support of this station. This is KRVS 88.7 FM Lafayette, Lake Charles, and online at krvs.org.
KRVS is licensed to the University of Louisiana at Lafayette by the Federal Communications Commission in Washington, D.C. We operate on an assigned frequency of 88.7 megahertz with an effective radiated power of 100,000 watts. KRVS is also authorized to operate aural studio transmitter links WHB 300 and WLJ 739 on a frequency of 946 megahertz. KRVS studios are located in Burke Hawthorne Hall on the campus of the University of Louisiana at Lafayette, with main transmitter facilities located in Maxey, Louisiana, and a backup transmitter